Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Panelcast. This is AJ.
And this is Brian, and you're listening to our 72nd episode.
In this episode, I will be reviewing Elephant Men.
And I'm going to be talking about the new comic I started reading, iZombie, as well as my progress on DMZ.
We'll both be talking about the epic finale of The Walking Dead that came on this past weekend.
And of course, we'll be bringing you some news bits. So we're going to take a quick break and then be right back.
Forbidden Panel is currently looking for artists. If you or someone you know would like to join us, please visit www.forbiddenpanel.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Before we get started here, I want to kind of go ahead and apologize for the delay in getting the episodes up. Holidays and work schedules and everything kind of throwing everything into chaos. So
it's all Brian's fault.
It is. It's all my fault. But look at it this way. You're going to be getting to enjoy two episodes of the Panelcast at the same time.
And while that news from the past episode may be a little old and dated, it's still fun to listen to.
Yeah. Fun. All right, well, let's go ahead and, I guess, jump into the news here. We won't delay your podcast listening any longer. Let's see. First story we got here. Oh, this is sort of a reverse on the Milo getting into, starting his own comics and then getting cast as the lead in the TV show based off of his comic. This is a story about the True Blood actor Michael McMillan, who is going to be co-writing the True Blood comic book.
There's already a True Blood comic book out there, though.
Well, apparently he's going to be writing it now. So I don't know if they're starting another series or if he's just taking over as writer, but
It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I thought so too. It I don't know. It kind of just seems like another gimmick to sell comics, really.
Now, Michael McMillan is the actor that plays the overzealous priest in the Brothers of the Sun or something organization on the show. I guess I just admitted that I watched the show, didn't I?
I think so.
Crap.
Just say you looked it up on Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I did. Now, he plays the Reverend Steve Newland. He's going to be helping write that. And it's the second arc of the True Blood comic book, so.
Yeah. So that's what that is.
That's what
that is. Yeah, I don't follow True Blood at all, but I know it's a popular thing.
You know, honestly, the only reason I watch True Blood, and I'll be flat out blunt, honest with everybody here, is the nudity.
That's all good reason.
And the occasional vampire, werewolf, naked hot chick sex thing that happens. Otherwise, I'm really not too into it. I can understand where people would be, because it's more of an adult version of Twilight, but at the same time, it's still kind of Twilight-y, you know?
Nobody sparkles, do they?
Nobody sparkles at all. Well, kind of. But only when they drink the fairy blood and they walk in the sunlight, then they kind of sparkle. Otherwise.
Okay, that was TMI for me.
Moving on. My news bit is, all my stuff is really weird. Hugh Jackman says he's going on a 6-month, 6,000-calorie-a-day training regime to add 25 pounds of muscle for Darren Aronofsky's The Wolverine. This is reportedly more weight than Jackman has ever put on before for this role, and he's been in touch with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who did the same amount of muscle buildup in the recent action thriller Faster. Basically, he just wants to bulk up and be the beefiest, craziest Wolverine ever for this next version of the movie, which, if Darren Aronofsky is doing, could be good, considering it's focusing on the samurai part of Wolverine's past. So, I don't know. But at the same time, They've already killed the Wolverine image for me, since Wolverine is 5 foot three in the comics and 6 foot one on the movie. You know, so all the rent references and stuff like that are out the window, which is some of the fun parts for me. But it will be interesting to see if how he pulls this off. I'm sure a lot of the ladies out there are very excited to see Wolverine dressed up in a samurai outfit and all beefy. So, yeah, we'll see how that turns out.
I'm not necessarily opposed to that myself.
And we're done with you. You don't watch the True Blood, but this is okay to say, right?
It's Wolverine. It's okay.
Okay. That makes it all right. He's okay. He's our man.
Well, there's that and the fact that, you know, Darren Aronofsky.
Right. Aronofsky, I mean, he's the shit. I don't think I've seen an Aronofsky movie I didn't like.
Right.
To be honest with you. And the fact that they worked together in, what was that last movie that they did together? I can't remember what it was called.
The Fountain.
The Fountain, which was also a comic book adaptation. And you can't deny the visuals in that movie. The visuals were gorgeous in that movie. So the fact that they've worked together and they know each other, and it's Aronofsky, once again, it leads me to have a little bit more faith in what's coming up with the Wolverine movie.
There's an interesting story. Apparently, the classic comic book Tintin is in court in Belgium for being racist. Apparently, there's the comic book Tintin and Congo, which I honestly haven't read them, so I can't really talk about the content of the comic itself, but it's a gentleman, I guess, who is actually from the Congo and currently living in Belgium, is bringing a case about it and trying to get it removed from the libraries. So
there you have it.
Yeah, that's I don't know. I don't really know what to say about that.
You know, honestly, you can look deep into any type of comic book out there and you'll find some baseline of racism hidden amongst all the subtext.
Right.
But Tintin's been around for a very, very, very long time. So unless he's suing about a current storyline, then his actions are just retarded. Maybe he just needs some money or something. I don't know. And again, I know very little about the situation, but
from my understanding, this title was originally published in 1931. So I really don't see this actually going anywhere. I mean, regardless of whether or not the content is actually racist, I don't know I don't know the laws that they have there regarding racism and things in Belgium. So maybe it's different, but I would think if it had stood up this long, this case really isn't going to change anything. And honestly, I mean, I think it's kind of stupid to try to combat racism by banning books,
right,
you know, getting them removed from libraries. I mean, while I'm completely against it, you know, racism, I don't agree with the removal of content from libraries.
Beautiful thing about books or any type of media that's out there, whether it's racist or not, whether you agree with it or not, the wonderful thing about it is that you don't have to read it. And bringing it up right now, believe me, if it was racist, then people already know that it's racist. But bringing it up right now, all it's going to do is publicize it more, have it earn more money, because people are now going to purchase the books to try and read it and understand what you're talking about or see your point of view, and thus, you know, garner more attention for it. It's a book. If you don't appreciate what it says, you don't like what it says, don't read it. Bottom line. And I'm not saying that, you know, hey, racists, go for it. You know, let them win the day. But it's just that simple. If you don't like it, don't read it. Tell your friends not to read it. Move on. But to bring up a, you know, a lawsuit like this, all you're doing is promoting it, helping to promote it. There is no such thing as bad press.
It's the Streisand effect.
Right.
Basically.
So moving on from that story, in the Superman news, the Superman movie news, in the latest reboot that's coming out, Christopher Nolan has bowed out of any further creative input on the upcoming Superman movie, reports HitFlix. Basically, Nolan's wife and producing partner Emma Thomas brought up how Nolan is so single-mindedly when making a picture that it's hard for him to get to work on anything else. And since he's working and concentrating on The Dark Knight Rises, he will be unable to split his concentration between both Batman and Superman films. Hey, here's a hint. Do World's Finest with Batman and Superman in it, you dumb fuck. Anyway, so now with Zack Snyder on board as director of the Superman reboot, he'll be in charge of doing all of that creative input and everything like that. Thomas indicated that Nolan and David Goyer had just an idea they couldn't believe wasn't being explored by Warner Brothers, so they brought it to the appropriate screenplay, and it's now Snyder's picture. So basically, we're going to be seeing something that we hadn't seen before in the Superman film, which I have no idea what that would be since.
Well, as long as it's not Tim Burton's vision as Superman, I think we'll be pretty much okay.
Right, or the forced upon Kevin Smith version where they fight a big giant spider at the end.
Well, I mean, Zack Snyder does a pretty decent job of making comic book movies, so.
You know, I got nothing against Zack Snyder. I am all amped for Sucker Punch. So, Zack, if you can do it, go for it. Knock yourself out. The only thing I have against Zack Snyder is when we went to Comic-Con and he's sitting on stage with, I can't remember his name. Holy crap. Frank Miller. He's sitting on stage with Frank Miller and he's getting all the attention and Frank Miller's getting ignored. You know? The only reason Zack Snyder had a reason to be up on stage is because inventors and innovators like Frank Miller are, you know, broke way for us. They, you know, led the charge in order for them people like them to be up there with their comic books and original thinking. So that's the only problem I ever had with Zack Snyder. Otherwise, I thought 300 was great. I thought everything else he's done was wonderful. So yeah, go for it.
Well, let's see. The comic giant Diamond Distributors is actually going to be closing one of their Los Angeles distribution center. I'm not really sure what that signals for the company. I'm not sure if that's means that they're cutting back just because they're not making any money or.
I think Diamond is finally feeling the effect of online comic book sales or virtual comics and stuff like that, you know, the iPad and all that.
Right, which they really shouldn't be if they had been smart about things. If like the whole comic industry really had been smart about, the embracing. I think that really kind of applies to any media, really. It
Right.
seems like a lot of these companies are just so adamant against embracing digital distribution that it's hurting them. Yeah, apparently. Just comic book sales have been down in general, so I guess that's the main reason why they're closing the distribution center. I'm kind of surprising that they're closing the Los Angeles one. You would think that area would probably be pretty big, and just I mean, in terms of just the number of people that live not just in Los Angeles, but that whole county.
True, but at the same time, imagine how much money they'll save by closing that one down.
True, I suppose. I don't know how much money actually goes into that particular distribution center, but I guess maybe they have some smaller alternatives, or maybe they just have some other ones in California that they can use to pick up the slack. But it looks like it's going to be closing down January 5th, and I guess we'll just have to kind of wait and see what this means for Diamond and the comic industry as a whole. So, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Awesome.
Greetings, Forbidden Panelites. This is Benjamin Gleibert, Director of Publishing for Symantec, San Diego's premium comic book publisher and home of MeeToy and the webcomic The Undergrounds. Check us out online at Symantec.com. That's SEMANTINK.com. For now, enjoy your geeky gurus, AJ and Brian. Symantec Publishing. Find the meaning in print.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Panelcast. Continuing on with the news, the show Dexter, I know it's not really comic book related, but I like the show.
Yeah, we talk about TV and movies and stuff anyway.
Yeah, well, you know. It has been renewed for its sixth season. This season has done so well that they decided to bring it back for another season. Have you been watching this show this season?
Yes, I have, actually.
How do you like it?
I am actually liking it a lot better than last season.
Yeah, I think the inclusion of Julia Stiles is actually done well. You know,
yeah.
I was worried that it was going to be another, you know, Jimmy Smith's season where she, you know, he teaches her how to do stuff and then she turns against him or something, but it seems to be working out pretty well.
Yeah,
I am a little upset about how quickly he's getting over his wife, but
yeah, that was my only issue that I've had with this season. It's just like the whole death of his wife thing just kind of got tossed by the wayside.
It did, but if you think about it, he really wasn't too in love with his wife. He just originally married her just to appear normal on the outside so he can continue his serial killer ways. So it kind of makes sense. Like, the only real reason he felt anything for his wife is that she bore his son. And at that point, he started to develop some sort of feelings toward it. But, you know, this one, he seems has genuine feelings for her, and it's kind of cool to see.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they kind of touch a little bit on, like, how Rita's death affected him, but, like, it seems like they're not really dealing with that too much. Like, they're focusing more just on the dynamic between him and the Julia Stiles character.
Right, Lumen.
Right,
but at
Lumen.
The same time, there's so much going on in such a short amount of time. He really doesn't have time to reflect on the past feelings, you know?
Yeah.
I was going to say, as all the stuff that seems to be going on seems to be taking place in the span of, like, a week, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of stuff going on in a short period of time. What I'm hoping that they're going to do with it is that they're going to continue this next season, and it's not going to be a thing where, you know, she dies or leaves or whatever at the end of the story arc, and then they go on to something else. Like, kind of like to see a little bit more continuity.
Right, because she has yet to deal with the fact of the dynamic that after, you know, he helps her extract her revenge on all these people, that he needs to continue on killing. You know,
mm-hmm.
They haven't dealt with that yet, and I'm interested in seeing, I'm guessing that's what's going to happen next season. So I'm interested in seeing how that works out.
And, let's see. There's an interesting little crossover between science and comics, which I kind of like to talk about every time I see one of these. There was a doctoral student by the name of Neil Cohn, who is currently working to... I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this. Obviously, I'm not a doctoral student myself, but basically, he's doing research for Tufts University. And essentially, I guess, studying comic books and... not only comics themselves, but studying the way that people actually read comics. And it looks like he's developing a theory that comic books are actually like the series of images that they present can be interpreted like a language in terms of that, you know, comics, you know, they're giving you more information than just the words and the text, you know, like the narration and the dialogue, like they're presenting something, but in a visual language rather than, you know, in printed words.
Well, that's been obvious for many decades. I mean, it's, as a comic book creator myself, you know, half the story is told in the pictures. It doesn't have to be pinpointed out with words and narration that falls along with it.
Right. So. Well, I'm probably dumbifying this whole thing a lot. But I'm sure I'm probably not getting the exact nuance that he's going for. But I just, this is always something that I find interesting when people start taking the comic book genre seriously and, you know, look at it as a legitimate medium to be studied. And so I'm happy to see that there's somebody out there that's actually doing this work, you know, as his, hopefully as his doctoral thesis.
Well, you know, back in the day when... you know, we've discussed it before. Watchmen, the Watchmen series, was the first and only comic book series ever to be taken seriously, to win any kind of awards or anything like that outside of the comic book genre. And mm-hmm. after that, it was the last one because, you know, the world still sees comic books as being funny books. They don't take them seriously, right, any type of literature faction whatsoever. So it's been our argument for the longest time that it is indeed. I mean, the amount of effort and work and talent that goes into creating a comic book, not just in the art side, but on the writing side as well, is intensive. I mean, V for Vendetta, I mean, come on now. That's some intensive stuff going on right there. So to see this happening is I don't know. It's a little bit of too little too late, in my opinion.
You know, maybe too late for us, but maybe not too late for, you know, the world or for, you know, the culture in general. I mean,
but honestly, the only reason it's really getting any type of, you know, with this happening, any type of attention is because of the fact that for the past 5 years, the past five summer blockbusters have all been comic book related as far as movies go. So
I think that might be part of it, but it seems to me that his approach to this is more not focusing so much on the impact of comics in the culture in general, so much as what is it that comics actually do? Like, when people are reading comics, like, what are they actually getting out of it? Like, what is the actual information? And studying more the relationship between words and images and the way that our brains interact in extracting information from them. Like, it seems like it's more focused specifically on the reading of comics rather than the impact of comics in art and literature and society.
Well, true, but still. My argument is right, damn it.
Well, no, they're valid points, but I'm just thinking that in terms of this, like, I think it's interesting because it's going to be interesting.
Well, you're basically saying that he's developing a scientific theorem behind what's happening with comic books, why they're so interesting,
right?
What, you know,
right,
stuff like that, and that I can totally understand and respect. But again, to me, it's a little too late because this has been going on for the longest time, you know. And I think the only reason he's doing this type of investigation is because of how impactful it has become in society today, you know.
It's possible, but he's also, you know, a young guy, so
I mean,
it's entirely possible that it just, you know, his love of comics growing up is what inspired him to do it.
And being a young guy is awesome that he wants to look into that. But what I'm saying is that it should have been done a while ago. Somebody should have done this a long time ago. But it was because comics weren't taken as a serious form of literature that, you know, nobody cared. In the colleges now, some of the colleges, local colleges that are around in my area, comics are being taught as part of the English addendum, you know, as part of English courses. The impact in comic books on society today and stuff like that. There are courses that are taking place in the colleges today that focus on comic books themselves. And,
right. Well, I mean, you have to consider other things, though. Like, you know, Shakespeare in his time, he was pop. You know, he was pop. He was, you know, what was hot at the time. He was essentially like, you know, the blockbusters that we have now. I mean, it's really not until, you know, hundreds of years later that, you know, people spend their entire careers just studying Shakespeare, you know, right, or even other researchers, even more modern people, things, you know, like Hemingway and stuff like that. Like,
well, see, and that's my point exactly, that half of these old school people, old creators and writers and stuff, died poor and paupers, and their stuff wasn't discovered until later. You know, it's a shame, is what I'm saying, that the stuff hasn't been looked into sooner, you know, to maybe...
No, I agree. I agree with that point. I'm just saying that I don't think it's really ever too late. It might be too late for us right now to really ever see comic books accepted as a legitimate art form. But I really think with people doing research like this, eventually it's going to lay the foundation for, you know,
right, it's going to make it easier for the next generation of comic book creators to be taken seriously.
Right.
Cool. Moving on. This next news bit is another admittance of shame for me, and where I admit that I watch Smallville. I don't like that I watch it. In fact, the show has been crap for years, but for some reason I keep watching it. I'm like a deer in headlights in that aspect. But this season of Smallville has been a lot more tolerable than the previous seasons, in that they know it's their last season, so they're going balls out with it. But in that same vein, the CW, which is the company that puts out Smallville, is looking for a new TV series to take the place of Smallville once Smallville is gone. And that TV series, it will be based on the superheroine known as Raven. Raven, who, if you watch the Teen Titans on Cartoon Network, is her name is Rachel Roth and is a half-demon with empathic and telepathic powers and the power of teleportation, skills she uses to stop various villains. Now, my concern is the last time they tried to do a female lead comic book show, it was called Birds of Prey, and it didn't even last a full season. Granted, Birds of Prey was a piece of shit, and hopefully they put a more production value into this, but at the same time, it's a CW, which means it'll be some hot preteen bitch sluttily dressed and walking around having gothic mood swings. So, I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
It doesn't sound good at all. And again, I'm not saying that I love Smallville, but hopefully they take the cue from Smallville and step it up a little bit more. You know, step it up a notch when producing the series. So look forward to it next season on CW.
I don't think I have any other stories. Do you got anything else?
Yep, I got a few more. Woohoo! First up, four more people have been cast in to join the new Spider-Man film, and also a new villain. Campbell Scott, who many of you may know from Royal Pains, which is out right now, as well as other films, and Julianne Nicholson are set to play the parents of Peter Parker, both of whom look really young, and thus have me wondering why they would be the parents. Oh, wait, no, I'm wrong. Sorry, the parents die early. That's okay, so they'll probably only have like 2 minutes of screen time. See, I talked myself into it. Also, Irfan Khan from Slumdog Millionaire the Cop is set to play the villain named Van Adder, and Annie Paris from Rubicon will be set to play his wife. There isn't a Van Adder in the comics, so don't go expecting anything like that, but he will be playing, you know, some sort of villain in the role. And again, as we stated in last week, the character of Gwen Stacy's father has been cast by Dennis Leary. So, I don't know. It looks like they're stepping up the money-wise as far as casting goes for the new Spider-Man. So, we'll see how that goes. Also, Christian Bale has gone on record to state that this will be the last Batman he ever does as far as doing The Dark Knight Rises. He apparently doesn't want to get typecast into a superhero role like that. Here's my two cents. If you find a role that you're good at and people appreciate, how about you stick with it? Since you ruined the Terminator franchise, why don't you just stick with the Batman franchise and make your money? The only reason you really got cast as Bruce Wayne in the first place, or why anybody was behind his casting as Bruce Wayne, was due to American Psycho. We knew the guy can be in a suit and play dual personalities. So because of that, you know, we all jumped on board when we saw he was being cast as Bruce Wayne and Batman. Plus, we know the man knows how to put on some muscle. So there you go. Iron Man 3 news. John Favreau has said that the third Iron Man will be set after the events of the Avengers, which means he is unsure as to where things will be right now. Dark Horizons reports that Iron Man 3 is going to be a sequel or continuation of Thor, Hulk, Captain America, and the Avengers, this whole world, and they have no idea what it is. They don't know, think that they can do either from conversations that they've had, and right now, Captain America and Thor are the big priorities. Iron Man 3 is already reportedly scouting locations in New York and is targeting a May 3rd, 2013 release date. In Black Panther news, having voiced the character of the short-lived animated series, actor Jaimon Hussu is reportedly keen on portraying the superhero Black Panther for Marvel Studios. Hussu says he's eager to take on the role, and the animated series was aimed at building interest in the live-action movie. That was the idea, using it as a leverage to tell a feature story, end quote. Jaimon Hussu is... I dig the guy. He played Midnight in Constantine, as well as had various roles in other films, Gladiator, to name one of them. So I think he'd be awesome as Black Panther, though a little old. He'd probably do better as Black Panther's father. So, yeah, there's that. And the last bit of news I had, Spider-Man is being shot in red. meaning they're using the Red Epic 3D digital cameras, according to cinematographer John Schwartzman. They are shooting it in 3D with four Epics mounted on three Reality TS-5 rigs. Basically, they're shooting it in new technology, which will help the 3D imaging come out a little bit more poppier.
Now, so whether, expect it to come out on IMAX?
Yeah, it's coming out on IMAX. Now, whether or not they're going to have like the cheesy 3D Spider-Man swinging in the screen, making it think he's going to land in your lap effects on it or not, remains to be seen. But if they do with it as they're doing with other movies such as Avatar and stuff, they're really using 3D as a way to enhance the definition, the high-definition quality of the film. As opposed to where it's 1080p, they use it to step it up a notch. So you're not really seeing 3D animation or effects. More along, you're just seeing a real higher definition of film quality. So, again, that remains to be seen. We'll see when the first trailers come out.
I'm just a little worried that what you're going to end up seeing is just like a giant Spider-Man package flying towards your face.
I'm sure you won't mind that, since you didn't mind, Manhattan's Dr. Manhattan's package flying at your face.
There was a little bit more than just a package there. It was the whole thing.
Yeah, it was the whole package.
There was beans and franks. It wasn't just like.
And what's sad is, while everybody else was ducking it, you sat there wide-eyed and open-mouthed. So I don't understand. Speaking of trailers, Batman Arkham City, the trailer for that has come out. So if you get a chance, go check it out. Also, the trailer for Transformers 3 has come out. I know we mentioned Transformers, and automatically everyone's going, but this one actually looks like it has a decent storyline. So search the internet and check it out. So, Brian, if you have no other news bits or little things and quirks you want to talk about, we'll go ahead and take a quick break.
I'm serious, no, girl. I think that's it.
Be right back.
Hey, this is Brian of the Forbidden Panel Podcast. I just want to invite you to listen to my companion podcast, The Geek Girls, featuring one-on-one interviews with geeky ladies. Look for Geek Girls on ForbiddenPanel.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. All right, we're going to start jumping into the comics we've been reading. As you all know, AJ has been constantly pestering me to catch up on DMZ, so I've been working on doing that.
About time.
Yeah, well, I'm up to issue 20 right now, so I'm still not completely caught up with the series, but I'm getting there. But this is one of those comics where I don't really want to, blow through the comics as fast as I can, because there's so much in there that, there's so much detail that I just want to take my time with each issue and just really kind of get as much out of it as I can.
Yeah, it's one of those series that, much like with The Walking Dead, you can't just read issue, because you really have to take a break in between, because waiting a month for the next issue for the story to be complete, that story arc to be complete, is just torturous, in my opinion. So you have to read it like one story arc at a time.
There's that, and for me, it's just the fact that, this world is fleshed out so well that, there's so much detail, not just in the art, but just in the character development and just, in the background and the history of everything that's going on. There's so much to take in. Case in point being the issue that was it was printed like a magazine.
Yeah, the tour guide issue, the best zero issue any comic book has ever put out.
Yeah, it just goes through like history and the culture and really shows like how much detail there is to the world of this comic series. And there's so much that I would almost feel bad just kind of, skimming through the comics as fast as I can to catch up. I want to get everything out of it.
Right. So, yeah, you should really try and hurry up. At least read through issue 28, because, the issues 22 through 28 are self-contained issues. So they don't really follow any story arc or anything, and it'd just be a quick read, and it's pretty awesome. So I'm really glad that you're liking the series, though.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot. It's definitely very, very, I don't have a really good word to describe it, but probably would take several different adjectives. But yeah, I like DMZ a lot. It's a very good comic.
Awesome. Moving on to what I've been reading. I've been reading Elephant Men, created by Richard Starkings. Elephant Men is one of those books that I found at the Ape show that we did in January. And basically, it's set about 200 years into the future, and it's kind of a mix of Blade Runner, Island of Dr. Moreau, and Fifth Element, even. And that basically what happens is that a company decides to create hybrids, mixing animal and human DNA to build a perfect army for themselves. And in that course, you're met with a whole bunch of different characters and stuff. And this book, this series is done so well that half the time you forget that you're reading about a half elephant, half human, or a half crocodile, or so forth, And it's so gritty and dirty, the world that is created, and the characters are so fleshed out that it's a really, really good book. And yeah, if you get a chance, man, please pick it up and read it. We'd love to hear your opinions on it. It's done by, Richard Starkings. The art is phenomenal in there. There's a lot of guest writing in there, including Joe Kelly, who Brian, wrote I Kill
Yeah, he made me
Giants.
cry,
Yeah, he
so.
made you cry. I made you cry too when I kicked you in the shin, but still, it's seriously a good series, and we're both happy. I don't want to say it's a rare occasion, but there are occasions, like I'm guessing with the book you're about to talk about, where we come across comic books that we're like, oh fuck, really? You know what I mean? But this is
Right.
one of those series, along with DMZ, where it's a great series, and it's definitely worth the read. And those fans of ZKS can understand and relate, and where the first few issues of the series that originally came out, called Hip Flask, came out once a year. So you would have to wait a year between issues, and I'm surprised it didn't get the fanfare that it deserved, or the fanfare that it did get was so loyal that they would wait the year for it to come out for the next issue to read it. So all the books are collected right now, currently in a 3-volume hardcover set and softcover set, and they're very big, thick, monstrous books. I mean, these books, all three of them together, weigh a good 20 pounds altogether, So, yeah, pick it up and read it and give us your opinion on it. Let us know what you think about it. Brian?
The new comic that I started reading recently, originally I thought it was going to be based off, it's called iZombie, and I thought it was going to be based off of the movie, the same name. It's like some indie zombie film. It is not. It's a story. It's published under Vertigo, and it's being done by Chris Robertson and Michael Allred doing the art. I guess the best way to describe it would be it's kind of like a horror comedy sort of mashup kind of thing. Like I don't know. It's strange because it seems like it basically what it is Chris Robertson took the whole like monster movie genre and decided to do his own thing with it. And the results are kind of interesting, but I'm not really sure where the series is going just yet, at least in terms of the tone of this series. Like the plot is kind of transparent at this point, I think. Like I really kind of have already figured out where the plot line is going. The story basically is the protagonist is a character named Gwen, who is a zombie, and she is attempting, along with her friend who is a ghost and another friend who is a were-terrier, they're attempting to just sort of live normal human lives. And rather than just going out and being a monster and feasting on people's brains, she works as a grave digger and then goes back at night to dig up the people she buried and eat their brains instead. And in the process, she ends up gaining the memories and finding out how these people died. And then goes out and, using their memories, tries to put their spirit at rest by correcting whatever wrongs happened to them. So there's a whole bunch of different genres that are all kind of mashed up together in this. A little bit of Scooby-Doo and, you know, some little bit of maybe like a just kind of a monster movie sort of stuff. They've also introduced some characters that are this organization of like some sort of, I guess, like Knights Templar or Paladin kind of thing where, you know, they go out and hunt monsters and they seem to be religiously motivated, but I don't know. They haven't really touched on that too much, like what about their organization. But at the point that they're at in the story right now, of course, Gwen has met up with one of the Monster Hunter characters and they've sort of like hit it off and started dating. And so that whole storyline, I can kind of see where that's going. I don't know exactly how I feel about this comic just yet. I mean, it's only 7 issues in, so it's still kind of new. But it's... I'm not sure, like, if the comic is trying to take itself seriously or not. There's a lot of sort of campy, lighthearted elements to it, especially, you know, they there's, like, I made the comparison with the Scooby-Doo, and at some point in the comics, they do kind of touch on the fact, like, the writer and the artist sort of make reference to the fact that there's some Scooby-Doo-esque elements to their comic. So, but then again, they have things like there's, you know, some slight nudity and profanity and stuff in the story. So I don't know. It keeps kind of going back and forth between dark and campy. And so the tone of the comic is really where I kind of have a little bit of an issue because I don't know where that's going yet. But they've at least presented enough, you know, plot elements that the story is interesting, but kind of predictable. I'll have to keep reading, I guess, just to kind of see where it goes. But if it just keeps sort of like treading this line where it jumps from cheesy to serious to cheesy to serious, I don't know how much longer I'm going to follow it.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I didn't pick up the book initially, because it just seemed like a very cheesy, campy story, and I just wasn't too in the mood for something like that right now. I thought it would distract me from being able to write ZKS properly, you know, or the way I wanted to. I didn't want it to influence me in that manner, so.
Yeah, well, it's definitely nothing like ZKS at all. Like, this is more of like a more like a typical kind of monster movie thing, you know, because they have ghosts and they have mummies and, you know, vampires and were-terriers and stuff like that. So this is more almost kind of like Universal's Monsters meets Scooby-Doo kind of thing with a little bit of like adult themes thrown in. So yeah, I wouldn't say that it's anywhere in the same genre as ZKS at all, other than the fact that there's a zombie in it.
Well, all right then. If you have nothing else, then we'll go ahead and take a quick break and be right back.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art. Thanks. Like
this. Hey everybody, welcome back. All right, we got some announcements for you, so you wanna do those for us, AJ?
If I have to, lazy ass.
You don't
Brian.
Have to. We could just sign out now and just leave everybody hanging.
No, we must make the biggest announcement ever. For those
All
of
right.
who follow us on Facebook or on our website or anything like that, you may be aware of. I don't know how to put this, but basically, finally, Forbidden Panel is proud to present their first comic book convention that we're hosting called the Inland Empire Comic Expo. We are Inland Empire folk, and we got tired of, you know, having to go all over California just to find a decent comic book show. So instead, we decided to go ahead and put one on ourselves. It will be on February 6th, 2011, located at the Fox Event Center in Redlands, California, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Now, this is a very fan-oriented show, so much in that we're going to have costume contests and raffles, and we're going to have live bands playing. We're going to have cosplayers running around, and we are very, you know, we really want people to come dressed up. So much so that tickets are $12 at the door. If you come dressed in costume, it'll be $10. And if you have a really wonderful costume, we may even let you in for free. Children under 12 are free. And we'll have food there as well as plenty of water, sodas, beer, stuff like that for you guys to drink. And yeah, so far the turnout, the list of special guests include Comic Quest, which is a local comic book store, Four Color Fantasies, Draw Hard Studios, RCPS SoCal, the Cobra Night Watch 3rd Division, Jacob Crippen, Inland Empire Ghostbusters, GMI Games, Adventures Guild of Riverside, Javier Hernandez, Semantic Publishing, the Bandai Dasis, Grisela Rodriguez, Jeff Campbell, International Federation of Trekkers, the Colonial Defense Forces, Diablo Productions, the Webcomics Advocates, and the 501st Legion. Vader's finest cosplayer coming out to dress and show up. We'll have Inland Empire Ghostbusters. We'll have the Ecto-1 parked out front. We'll have a lot of gaming going on. We're going to have gaming upstairs in the balcony as far as, WoW games and card games and stuff like that. And, and the list just keeps growing. So far, we've made the announcement that this was happening a week ago, and the list that I just read off are the people that have signed up in the past week to come out and have booths with us. So tickets will go on pre-sale in January. You can purchase them online at either the Fox website or our website. Or you can wait and show up at the door and purchase them. Boom Studios has been kind enough to donate a prize package for the first place winner of the costume contest.
Awesome.
To include Stan Lee's new comic book, The Traveler, Incorruptible and Irredeemable. Yeah, and there's just so much more going to happen. So mark it on your calendars, folks. February 6th, the Inland Empire finally gets its own comic book convention. And you need to come out and support us and have fun. Man, there's going to be lots of things going on there. It's 8 hours, and 8 hours of pure comic book geeky fun. If you are listening, you are interested in becoming a vendor, please check our Facebook page or our website, ribbonpanel.com/IECE in all caps. For more information, you can follow it on Twitter, IE Comic Expo. We will update it every time a new guest signs up or new things are to be announced. So you can follow us all over there, too. Yeah, we're very proud of this. We're very excited to have this happen.
Yeah, this is pretty huge. I mean,
it's big for us. And we thought, the comic books coming out was going to be big. And don't get me wrong, we're very proud of it, that as well. But this is just going to be phenomenal. Phenomenal. And
We love comics so much that we want to bring as many comics as we can to people, and what better way to do it than with a convention?
Right. Even if we have to host it ourselves so that we can bring comic books and stuff to you. As we've said from the beginning, Forbidden Panel is very fan oriented. We love the fans. We're fans ourselves. So we can understand all the frustrations and stuff that we've had to deal with over the years as fans, as convention goers, as comic book readers, as movie goers, all the frustration and stuff that we've had to deal with. And we're doing our best to try and make things easier for you, the fans, especially in an environment like this, where we're presenting our own comic book show. And it won't just focus on Forbidden Panel. It's going to focus on all the artists and people that we've just listed off, as well as other people that are going to be signing up to come. One other little bonus that you guys will get to hear. As many of you know, we did a pinup contest recently, a couple months ago. The pinup book will be out. All the artists and participants of the pinup book will be at the Comic Book Expo, placed in their own booths and so forth. We're offering a challenge. The first person that brings us the pinup book signed and completely by everybody there will receive a free ZKS t-shirt as well Sweet. As copies of our other comic books that we're putting out. So we're making this even more interesting for you. You know, it's going to be a blast. Yeah. So,
comic convention scavenger hunt.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, that's... I'm all, like, lightheaded from talking about it. I'm so excited.
I'm excited for it. I really want to try to make it out there. Like, I'm just tempted to just spend all of my money and say, screw my bills. I'm going to fly out to California.
As everybody should be. Everybody should say, screw their bills. Come on out to the Alien Empire Comic Expo. What's even more awesome, Brian, I haven't had a chance to share this with you yet, but I met with a couple of people yesterday, and we will have commercials for the IECE coming soon. And
nice.
We'll be filming them on the 19th, and it's going to be awesome. Done by some of the coolest people that are out there. So, yeah. We're getting there, people. We're getting there. We're busting our ass just for you. And for us, but you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not entirely altruistic.
No,
you know, we're getting something out of it, but.
But it's fun. And,
yes,
and you guys are included in our fun, and that's really all we want. You know, all we're looking forward to. So, there you have it. Brian, anything else you got to add before we end this long-winded show?
I think we're like the biggest nerds on the planet. But I think that was pretty apparent to begin with, so I didn't need to say it.
Right. Yeah. So, So you may have noticed that episode 71 came up at the same time as 72, again, with the holidays and work and everything like that. We just haven't had a chance to post it previously. So thanks for tuning in to episode 71 and episode 72 of the panel cast. We promise it won't be such a long period of time between episodes. If you have nothing to do this weekend, Sunday, December 12th, Forbidden Panel, Necrosapien Press will be at the Los Angeles Comic and Sci-Fi Convention located at the Shrine Auditorium. We'll be out there pimping our wares and promoting and trying to get people to sign up, more vendors to sign up for the IECE. So come see us out there. Justin has a booth, and I will be out there naked, wandering around aimlessly, hoping to, you know, be touched in some way, shape, or form. But no, really. We'll be out there, so come out and say hi. We'll have copies of the ZKS 24-Hour Comic Book Day Spotlight featuring Kayla, as well as all kinds of other goodies for you. So, for Brian, this is AJ. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week on episode 73.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.